Blog Talk Radio.
What up, doe?
What's Ladies going on, people? Gentlemen,
welcome to another week or another episode.
Episode.
Let's talk that talk with Tweety and ALJ. Tweety, what's going on?
What's happening, people? What's going on, ALJ?
Out here in these streets trying to get it. Beautiful week. My son had surgery on his toe this week. Doing good. Back to getting on my nerves. But other than that, oh, look at that big dude. You know, the big youngster from UCL, University of Central Florida. That's on the TV. I just saw him dunking. Anyway, but a good week nonetheless. I was off for a few days after my son had surgery. Waking up in the middle of the night, making sure he was straight, getting his medicine. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. Let's get into it while we can get into it. So, if you haven't, I don't even particularly care. Never mind. If you haven't heard, the old geezer Peyton Manning is reportedly planning to retire from the NFL. I think they said the Broncos are supposed to have a press conference. He's going to have his own press conference on Monday and announce his retirement. Now, Tweety, do you think that Peyton Manning's retirement was a father time decision? Did the game decide that he was retired, or did he decide that he was retiring, I should say? Or did the game retire him?
I'm going to lean more toward the game retiring him, and if not the game retiring him, the Broncos retiring him. I still think Peyton Manning want to play. I'm pretty for certain that the Broncos don't want him to be the starting quarterback there anymore. And I think that's why he's retiring. It wouldn't surprise me if he came back like around training camp or a little bit after training camp for somebody, or at least tried to anyway. Do I think he's a starter still in the NFL? Nah. I mean, like I said, maybe a team would give him a chance just because he is Peyton Manning. But other than that, I think the game passed him by. Or his body just broke down. Injury finally caught up to him. Father Time is undefeated.
I think the game retired Peyton Manning. And I'm not even talking about injuries or, I mean, you know, I guess you could say it was injury that dealt the final blow. But, you know, in reality, his performance was declining. I mean, you know, that's why I say the game is retiring, because the game, he doesn't have the skill set anymore to play the game at a high level. And being that, you know, some of this stuff is just assuming that Peyton Manning does not want to be a backup quarterback, meaning he doesn't want to come into the season, have that conversation with the head coach / general manager, saying, hey, I know you're Peyton Manning, but you're going to come here and you're going to back up so-and-so. Now, if Peyton Manning could do that, if he could set his ego aside and could accept the backup role, sure. You know, I'm almost 100% certain there would be a team in the NFL would allow Peyton Manning to come in and be their backup quarterback.
No doubt.
From everything you've heard over his entire career in the NFL, you've always heard about how knowledgeable and how smart of a football player that he was.
Excuse me.
So I'm sure any team would love to have that kind of intellect. And, you know, you always heard about his preparation. I'm sure they'd love to have that passed on to a young quarterback. But if he's not willing to accept that role, you know, there's definitely, I'm not sure that there's any team in the NFL he can start for. So maybe one or two. But, you know, and that would be simply because he's Peyton Manning. And the other thing about bringing Peyton Manning in as a guy is that, I mean, bringing Peyton Manning is, if he's a backup, coming off a Super Bowl victory and all that, just based on name alone, you know, especially if you got a young quarterback, you know, a young quarterback has a bad game or two, maybe a really bad half or something, then, you know, you got fans, the media clamoring for Peyton Manning. And, you know, it's probably a situation that is unnecessary, because Peyton Manning is nobody's definition. Nobody's quarterback of the future. And from what I saw last year, he's not even a what I would call a mercenary, a gun for hire. You know, hey, this guy is getting to the end of his rope. Let's bring him in one last year. You know, let's bring him, you know, my team is this close. You know, we're close. All we need is a quarterback. Bring Peyton Manning in for 1 year and, you know, give it our best shot. I don't think he's that because he's no longer the, he's no longer playing at the level where he can elevate a team with his play.
Agreed.
You know, so so I think the game, I think the game retired him, and I don't too much care about Peyton Manning's career. I'm sure he, you know, he's been a great quarterback over time, but he's kind of he's been one of those players who has always had a great relationship with the media. So the picture that has been painted of him has always been positive, no matter how much he loses in the playoffs or how poorly he has played in the playoffs in big games throughout his career. He's always been given a pass by the media, in my opinion, and never kind of they never come down on him as somebody who can't produce in big games. And, you know, I think LeBron James is kind of a comparison in the sense that, you know, at one point people were really doubting LeBron's ability to come through in the clutch after he played so poorly in the finals against the Mavericks. I think it was a year before that, his last year in Cleveland, he had the terrible game, the last game he played for the Cavs prior to him going to the Heat. But moving on, another about Peyton Manning and his old unsqueaky clean image. And, you know, they're out there, the media out there caping for him, the sheriff rides out. You know, must be a crooked sheriff, but whatever. I ain't going to even get into all that. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this week, you, me, and the people who listen to the show, but Ivy League teams, their coaches have voted to eliminate full contact practices. It's rating, as of when I was reading this, maybe an hour ago, 30 minutes, 45 minutes ago. There is waiting to kind of just be affirmed by the athletic directors and stuff like that, and then you know, it'll become official. Excuse me. What impact do you think the Ivy League deciding to no longer allow full contact practice in football? What impact do you think that'll have?
I would say none, but I honestly, I would say it's gonna they're gonna probably face a lot more injuries. I'm just gonna go ahead and be honest with you, because it's just like any other sport. It's hard to go from either practice mode or practice tempo, whatever you want to call it, to full game tempo without at least seeing what you're gonna see in an actual game. And in football, you're gonna see people hitting you. People are going to hit you. It's not going to be robots going to be in one spot, and if they're there, the play is over. No, they're going to hit you. People are going to hit you. And if your body ain't used to getting hit, or you don't even try to condition your body to get hit, it's going to be a lot of injuries on you just from dealing with the fact that your body ain't used to getting hit like that, or you haven't even put it through a trial era of getting hit. Because they're going to – I think a few schools have already actually tried. I think what Yale did it last year. And they said they had an improvement on their football team, but, I mean, you know, maybe because they play in the Ivy League, but, hey, it could be beneficial because it's less wear and tear on the body, but I think you're going to have not a lot more injuries, but I think you might have to face a little bit more of an injury bug when the season gets in the full swing over the long
haul. I think there's a few interesting things to this. I don't think it's that groundbreaking, or I would call it. I don't think it's as big of a deal that this is starting out in the Ivy League. And I say that because from the outside looking in, my perspective, nobody cares about Ivy League football except for people who go to Ivy League schools and who have gone to Ivy League schools. Other than that, there's not a national interest in Ivy League football. So the pressure on those coaches to win is not nearly the same as it is
at Alabama
Division I football programs. I mean, you even have to compare it to an Alabama. I would say there's more pressure at, you know, even a school like University of North Texas, which is not known for football.
Or UAB,
I would say there's more pressure to win there than there is at an Ivy League school. So that being said, to me, it's easier to experiment with things that may completely change the game because there's less pressure to win, whereas
right.
somebody doing that in, say, the Big 12 or something like that, it's going to be a lot bigger deal because, you know, those guys are going to be able to feed their families off of wins and losses. Whereas they're not, I'm not saying they don't care about wins and losses in the Ivy League, but I definitely don't think it is as important in the Ivy League as it is in a lot in the Power Five conferences and either just other conferences in general. So I think it's easier for them to do things like that, and so I don't think that is as big of a deal.
You're right.
The second piece of that, I have to disagree with you on the two parts of what you said about injuries. I think there will be fewer injuries because of this. Because I remember distinctly my senior year. This is probably the main reason I did not play football in college is because I despised tackling in practice. I hated it. I despised tackling in practice. I did not like to be tackled in practice. I hated it. I didn't mind practicing I didn't mind Fridays, but I didn't like it during practice. And my senior year in particular, my body was so worn down from football that it affected my basketball season. But I think that tackling in football and practice, full contact practice, I would agree. I mean, I think that you'll have fewer injuries overall because, you know, players' bodies will have more time to rest and completely heal during the week. Because, I mean, you and I both know that going through a football season, you're going to get little nicks and knacks, whether it's, you know, it may not be a full-blown on twisted ankle or something like that, but maybe, you know, you get your helmet slammed in, your hand caught in between the helmet. Now your hand's swollen. So, you know, maybe you don't have a broken hand or a broken metacarpal or anything like that, but, you know, your hand's still really sore. You know, that's just a small example. I think players will have more time to heal, and therefore I think there'll be fewer injuries overall in the Ivy League. I think I forget what school it is off the top of my head. I want to say it's Dartmouth. Like you were saying that I already started doing this in the Ivy League, and whichever school it was, they noticed that there were fewer injuries in their program while they were doing this. You know, I think it was in correlation to them reducing the amount of contact you could have in practice. And even if you go to the NFL, since the NFL has started controlling more the amount of practices you can have and the amount of contact you can have in practice, there have been fewer concussions in the NFL in practice. So I think that's definitely going to improve. I don't have to disagree with you. I don't think that you have to be hit during the week in order to be prepared to, be prepared to be hit on Friday. I don't think it's going to be, because, and this is kind of an extreme example. In the military, they don't shoot you.
But y'all have shooting drills.
Yeah, but
you
nobody gets shot, though.
But you have, that's because y'all probably don't use real bullets. So you mean tell me y'all don't have anything to where that simulates live combat? Nothing.
But I said you don't need to practice getting shot to be able to go to battle. Like I don't think you have to have full contact practice to be able to play football on Friday or Saturday or Sunday. That's my personal opinion. I don't think you have. For example, the high school that I volunteered at these past few years in the state that I'm living in now, we never. And I think that another important thing would be what is their definition of full contact? Right. So
okay.
Full contact, you locking and loading, hitting the guy, taking him to the ground, is that considered full contact? Or is full contact just – I think the definition would matter too because, like I was starting to say, the schools I volunteer at, we don't really do full contact, what I would consider traditional full contact practice. We pretty much never take guys to the ground.
Okay, that's
you don't
fine.
Get physical
like,
out there. You don't get popped. But, you know, is that
that's
full
all
contact? I think I'd have to know what their definition of full
to me,
contact,
that's full, contact.
Full contact is.
I said, because to me, that's full contact. To me, you can get the concussions and everything happens off the pop, not the takedown. So, to me, the pop isn't questioned. The pop itself is full contact because the takedown, like you say, it's it could be it's a solidify the players over, but at the same time you can stop a play even in a game without taking somebody all the way down to the ground. But yeah, to me that's full contact. Like that the pop is full contact.
I think the difference is like we're going – I mean, I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's one of those things where it's a quick whistle. You know, the coaches have kind of very much emphasized to the players that, you know, it's not you're not going half speed or really anything less than 100%. I can't quite explain it, but it's a very quick whistle. You know, the emphasis is on proper technique, tackling the right way, and less on, you know – but, I mean – I do think it'll have an impact and fewer injuries, but I don't expect power conferences to just come out right away and start adopting this. I mean, I just don't see it happening.
But then you also got people in power conferences that don't even really want to adopt to the spread offense. Like that's, you know, it's just one of those things in the power conferences. Like you say, it's so much pressure to win now and win like we've been winning. To just throw in something new and unproven is you know, kind of putting your career on the line. It's just honestly. So I agree with you as far as them including it. It's going to be a while. Even if the studies show overwhelmingly that the injuries are less or whatever have you, it'll be a while for a power conference school adapts to it.
I think in the power conferences, I think it's going to take – a higher – I don't think it's going to come from the coaches. I'll just put it like that. I don't think in the Power Five conferences that it will come from the coaches for something like this to happen. It's going to take that next level, some committee, some board of athletic directors, of university presidents, somewhere at that powerful level, the guys, the men and women who do the hiring of coaches – at that level, I think that's the level it's going to take for something like this to be the conversation to really start in the Power Five conference. I don't think it's going to be a bottom-up thing. I think it's going to be a top-down. It'll have to be a top-down thing. Because you got to think about it. You got guys who've been coaching for 30-plus years. So if they've been coaching 30-plus years, that means they've probably been playing and involved with the game of football for over 50 years. So they've seen the game get progressively change, and so they, you know, they got that built into that DNA for 50 years that being physical, hitting every day is part of football. So I think it's going to have to come from the athletic director type level for it to actually happen in a Power Five conference. But you know, the one thing that one of the Ivy League school has, it's kind of, you know, they implemented technology. Dartmouth, they have a thing. It's the acronym is MVP. I cannot remember what MVP stands for, but it's basically a tackle dummy that's on some sort of platform. You know, the same tackle dummy that we tackled when we were in high school. That's on a platform that somebody's standing over to the sideline. They have a joystick and it's motion control.
Move it.
So this one moves. You can go side to side, and that's one of the things that they've implemented in their practices to practice. Like you said, you know, you were saying earlier, tackle dummies don't move. That's one of the things that Dartmouth has implemented into their practices to allow guys to get a little bit of a game-like simulation while not putting the same wear and tear on their body just going full contact with an actual live body. I don't think this is necessarily something that's going to trickle down to high school levels with this kind of technology, because the other thing with technology is that it costs money. I have not seen anywhere that has projected the cost or if it's out there, but, you know, some kind of technology like that, it costs money. And I think for coaches to really want to adopt this at every level, their mind is going to say, okay, if I take out full contact practice, how am I going to get the repetition? And kind of like you were saying, that game-like feel into my practice. And, you know, that piece of technology could be an answer. But, again, you know, at the college level, it probably wouldn't be an issue for most colleges to afford it. But you talk about this trickling down to the high school level. There's going to be some high schools in it who can afford it, and there's going to be a bunch who cannot afford it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but, you know, interesting. I'm going to keep my eye on it, and I'm definitely looking forward to see how this transpires. Because I'm a guy. I don't think you need to tackle every day in football. That's my personal thing.
I'm not even going to say you need to tackle every day, because I don't even when I coach, even though it's a kid level, we don't tackle every day. Like that, I think that's a bit much, but maybe I'd say once a week if you practice more than once a week, you know. But I that's just me. Like I say, to me, that's the best way to get a game simulation going. Maybe not even just straight tackling drills. We hardly ever did those, but maybe like say team offense or team defense after, you know, the whole little technical situation. I don't like just bump bodies just for the sake of we hitting. That I think that's unnecessary. I agree with you on that.
I think the bumping bodies works. I'm not opposed to just slamming into. I mean, not slamming into people, but I'm definitely not opposed to that. I think that is a viable option and a good option as opposed to tackling where you're giving your guys. It's kind of like, you know, playing against the scout offense, the scout defense every day. Yeah, they're supposed to go 100%, but you know, if your star running back comes through there and you're the defensive tackle and the offensive guard is supposed to trap you and he misses his trap block, you don't cream the running back. You know, you might pop him a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to pop him and wrap him up. You're not going to hit him too hard, but you're going to pop him and wrap him up. And that's kind of what I think it should go is you can pop guys and wrap them up, but we're not going to go out here and have a knockdown drag out and, you know, try to, you know. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. And we'll move it on past that. Something we'll keep on, and I'm sure we'll revisit in the future as once it gets approved in the Ivy League. I'm sure it'll gain even more momentum in the media and be talked about a little bit more in football circles and just sports media circles. But last thing I want to cover before we get out of here, the Thunder. The Thunder have kind of been spiraling downward since the All-Star break. They've lost, I believe, 6 out of their last 8. They're second in the NBA behind the 76ers as far as blowing fourth quarter leads. In the last 10 days, let me make sure I got my math right. They've blown a fourth quarter lead they've blown 2 fourth quarter leads against the Warriors in the last 14 days.
Right.
And they blew
consider a 1-point lead against the Warriors a blown lead, though? Right.
Hey, you're winning. Because at the end of the game, if you're up by 1, you win. Hey, you blew the fourth quarter lead.
That's true.
You know, they blew a 20-plus point lead. Well, they weren't leading at 20 in the fourth quarter.
17,
but they,
if I'm
they
not
definitely
mistaken,
believe by double digits against the Clippers.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that this pairing of Russell Westbrook, what would you say the team? Because, you know, the big focus is always on Westbrook and Durant. Do you think that this team, as currently composed, will win an NBA championship? Because I hate to hear when people say, well, can they win an NBA championship? Well, if you make it to the playoffs, you can win an NBA championship because, in theory, you can win enough games. So, say can they is kind of a ridiculous question. Will they win an NBA championship as currently composed?
I personally say no, because not because of the two stars there. Honestly, because of the rest of the team. You have a few players coming off the more than a few players coming off the bench that are barely one-dimensional together. I mean, all they can do is score as far as Deion Waiters, Randy Foy. You have no defensive presence coming off the bench on the perimeter. That's what your stars do. That's all they have is offense. People say Russell Westbrook is a good defender, but I challenge you to give me somebody who he's locked down. I mean, that's just not what he does. But they can score. But I don't think that they play enough defense in this conference, just alone in this conference, to win an NBA championship. Like you say, yeah, they can because they have the talent. They can get to the playoffs each and every year. But this spiraling down toward the end of the season thing is starting to become all too common in Oklahoma City, whether it be Kevin Durant by himself when Russell Westbrook hurt or vice versa or if they together. It just seemed like this team starts going downward, except for the 1 year that they finished it all the way, at least getting to the finals and before losing to Miami. But other than that, I mean, I don't think that they will win an NBA championship as constructed. They don't have enough.
before I hit that, I've always wanted to address this just in general. I think in sports, the notion of a lockdown defender, it is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in sports. Because
okay.
It is probably, it is the one thing, and it's not directed at you. This is just a comment that you made that I have thought about multiple times. You know, you hear that all the time. This guy is a lockdown defender. Well, I guess, again, it would have to go back to what is the definition of a lockdown defender? Because if you look throughout the NBA, it really doesn't matter. If the guy is in the elite sport, you're not going to stop him. They may have a bad game or two. They may have to take more shots, whatever. But, I think a lot of people consider Kawhi Leonard to be the best perimeter defender in the NBA. Is he going to stop Kevin Durant? Is he going to stop Steph Curry from scoring? The answer is no. He may make it harder for them to score. They may have to make tougher shots. They may have a lower shooting percentage, but the lockdown defender, it's a myth. It's like Bigfoot.
That's what is a lockdown defender in the NBA, though, Darius. That's a lockdown defender. Who can get this person out of their game, change Kevin Durant from an efficient shooter to a volume shooter, changing Steph Curry from an efficient shooter to a volume shooter. You're right. That's the whole term of they going to get theirs. You just can't let them get it on their terms. And that's what making an efficient shooter to a volume shooter is this. That's what that does, not letting them get it on their terms, which means kind of disrupting the team chemistry because, like you say, you instead of taking 20 shots to get 15 points or 25 points, now you're taking 35, 40 shots. It kind of disrupts the chemistry of the team. And you don't even see Russell Westbrook taking people out of their element. That's what a defender, in the NBA does.
It's not even just Russell Westbrook. To me, I just think it's a myth in general. I think it's a myth in general that there is such thing. I mean, you may have a guy. My mindset thinking of a great defender is somebody who makes it tough for you to score, meaning they're challenging every shot you take. They're up close. They're making it hard for you to get the ball. They're trying to get you to take shots that you don't normally like to take. To me, that is what I would call a great defender in the NBA. I don't think there's such thing in my mind as a lockdown defender because if you're Kawhi Leonard, I'm just using him as an example. If you put him on Kevin Durant and let's say Kevin Durant averages 20 shots a game and he has to take 25 to get 30 points. Yeah, he's taking a few more shots, but if he still gets 30 points, what have you locked down? He hasn't really done anything. That's my opinion. But anyways, back to what we're actually talking about, I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't think this team that's currently constructed for the Oklahoma City Thunder will win an NBA championship. I think the time has kind of passed them by. They've tried to put some guys around Durant and Westbrook, but the pieces just don't seem to fit. You brought Enes Kanter in. You already had Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka. And Enes Kanter is a good offensive player, but he can actually rebound the ball. He's a horrible defensive player. Deion Waiters, I don't know if Deion Waiters does anything good anymore. Randy Foy, I didn't understand the Randy Foy thing because they had started playing the rookie a lot more, Cameron Payne. They started playing him a lot more, and then down at Randy Foy there, he's not playing as much. If you think about who comes off the bench, I mean, they got Foy coming off the bench, and they've gotten to the point now their bench is so bad and so unproductive that they have to have Durant and Westbrook on the court at all times.
At all times, yep.
Which makes it harder because you have to play both of them an insane amount of minutes. Because that's about the only way you can get both of them on the court together and cover down these other units. So I think part of it, too, is that their team is so – those two guys are so ball dominant, especially Russell Westbrook. I mean, you look at his numbers.
Exactly.
His stats are insane. But part of the reason he has those stats as far as, like, the he scores a lot of points and gets a lot of assists because he always has the ball in his hands.
Right.
I mean, like, if you watch the Thunder play, he always has the ball in his hands. I mean, it's quite a bit. But I don't think this team can win a championship. I think
seconds.
I wouldn't be surprised if Durant leaves. All right. That's all the time we got this week, folks. Join us again next Sunday, same time, same channel. Tell a friend to tell a friend. See y'all next week.
Talk that talk.